بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه. Welcome everybody to a special live stream, Safina Society live stream. This is the Nothing But Facts live stream in the third story of the La Cocina Soup Kitchen in the great state of New Jersey, right down the street from a famous and well-known Bob Wood Medical Center and Rutgers University. It's a getting nippy out. It's sunny, but it is nippy out here in central Jersey. And we are, alhamdulillah, brought to you by GRT, Global Relief Trust. You can always support them. They're now working hard to send doctors to Palestine, to Gaza. They're working with that. We hope to be having one of these physicians on as a guest to give us the news of what they're suffering. But right now we have a new organization that actually has been, maybe it's new to me, but it's been in business for 2 years, right?
Just about
2 years. It's called Impairs Masjid, and it is a virtual matrimonial company. All you brothers can get involved in, right? You got a free application with this brother right here. Are you all married? Only one is married? How are you here? Right? So we have our the founder here today, and let's welcome our founder. Welcome to the Safina Society Nothing But Facts live stream.
Super excited to be here. It's something that we've been looking forward to for a while. So inshallah, this is our first episode as well of trying to film some content with our mashayikh.
Wonderful. So some people are already asking why are we so late to start today, because we had to set up two cameras. They have their own camera. And all this setup takes a while, so that's why we ended up being a little bit off schedule today. But let's get straight to the subject. Tell us about your organization. What made you start this? And that's the first question I wanted. What made you start it? And really, what's the goal?
Yeah, so I think about 2 years ago, so I'm a medical student. I just had a lot of friends reaching out to me. I had 5 friends in 1 week. They reached out to me, they're like, Zakaria, you know a lot of people. Do you know anybody for us for the sake of marriage? And I didn't know why they were reaching out to me. I'm not a matchmaker. I'm not known as a matchmaker. So at one point I was like, you know what? This is a problem that all my friends seem to be having. Let me see if I can do anything about it. So I posted.
Yeah, I think we're good now. It's weird because we never have an echo usually. We should be good now.
We're good? Still echoing? Let's see, bismillah. So I posted on my Instagram story, you know, said, if anybody's trying to get cuffed, send me a DM, inshallah. Get cuffed.
Okay.
This is the...
That's bad, right?
Cuffed is in like, you know, cuff a ring on your finger.
Cuff
a
ring. Oh, cuffed, like, I don't know.
No, okay. Different kind of cuff.
All right, keep going.
So if anybody's, you know, trying to find somebody, send me a DM. And I had 75 people send me a DM just within my network. And so I was doing an overnight shift in the emergency department.
Well, you're a doctor?
I was in medical school.
You're in medical school?
I'm currently in medical school.
Okay. So you had the fast track of marriage.
Exactly.
Right. That's matrimonial. Go to medical school. You'll be married in 4 years, guaranteed.
That's the okay. goal. That's the goal.
All right.
So I'm there, and I would go and like help sew up a gunshot wound because I was doing an overnight shift. And then I would go and ask somebody their height preferences, and somebody like, these are like just very odd situation to be in.
Ajib, I never knew you were a physician. This whole time, I thought you were like a college student or something.
No. So I'm not. I'm going back to school in January, inshallah. So to finish up my third year of med school.
Nice. So, and this is where, Exen?
Georgetown in D.C.
That's where you started.
Yeah,
this org. Okay, started this org in Georgetown, which is a beautiful area, one of the prettiest areas in the whole country. Is Georgetown, that strip, K Street, between George Washington University and Georgetown University. That's one of the prettiest areas, especially in the spring.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful area. It's one of my favorite parts of the country. So you're working in you're doing medical school there, Georgetown Medical School.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't even know they had a medical school.
Yeah.
But so you're there, and is that where you're originally from?
I'm from Michigan.
Michigan.
Yeah.
And you're now moving to Dallas soon.
I just moved to Dallas because I just had my nikah done, and so she's in Dallas. So I'm there for the next few months before I go back and finish school.
MashaAllah, wonderful. Okay, so. You start this organization. How does it develop from mere texts and DMs to actually, you know, being an actual organization? So what is it now? It's a website or what?
Yeah, so it's a website. So we played around with a lot of different ideas. Okay. Because I realized there's, like, if I'm having 75 people just in my network send me their bio datas, there's a need for this. There's clearly whatever is out there isn't servicing our community appropriately. So I made a Google form and then just asked some questions about, like, what people are looking for and some personal information.
Yeah.
And people that were not, that I did not know, were sending me really vulnerable information about themselves.
SubhanAllah.
We had 250 people sign up in less than a week. And I realized, all right, there's a lot more here. And so over the course of about 6 months, we tried to find something that was in line with our values as, as Muslims, but also felt comfortable. And, you know, keeping that air of you can be as honest as you should be
good
when trying to find somebody. And that's when NPR started in December of 2022.
So I'm looking at your website here. You know what? I didn't realize it was in, with an N.
I thought it was an M too.
I thought it was an M.
Oh, no, no, no.
And the reason is that if we have an N-sec, you know, followed by a P, we're going to give that a iqlab right away. That's going to become in pairs, right? Because noon second followed by a P. N second. All right. All right. So it's in pairs, everybody. Yeah. INPAIRS.io. And of course, their logo is the pair, two pairs.
Exactly.
The fruit. Okay. So I'm looking here. It says 21st century to Muslim matchmaking. So you are, when you say Muslim matchmaking, you don't specify anything beyond that, just that he's a Muslim or she's a Muslim.
Exactly.
All right, you're not specifying anything else. I'm looking here at the website. It's a very simple, easy, nice, good-looking website. How does it work?
So okay. It's pretty simple.
Yeah.
Let's say Muhammad is trying to get married. So we'll use Muhammad as an example here. So Muhammad today is, what, the 16th? The 17th. Today's the 17th of October.
Good.
So he filled out this pretty comprehensive intake form on our website. It takes about 15, 20 minutes to fill out. We ask all the important questions. Some other services will ask questions like, do you like pineapple on pizza? That's really great to know. You just can't do anything with that information. It's not a conversation starter. It's not really any tangible information.
So you don't ask those questions.
We don't ask anything like that. So we ask questions like, what role does Islam play in your life? What are you passionate about? What are your interests? How often do you go to the masjid? Things that actually you should be looking for in a spouse. And then, so he's filled out this form by the 17th.
Okay.
On the 22nd of the month, we block it off for the next few days. We have actual matchmakers go through everybody's profiles, rank them against each other. And then on the 27th of the month, we release the pair drop over the course of 3 days.
Ooh, the pair drop. When?
On the 27th of every month.
Okay. The 27th of every Hijri month or lunar month? Because once you say 27th, I'm thinking of Ramadan, right?
27th in 10 days.
Okay, so the 27th of every Gregorian month.
Yes.
I said lunar, I meant Gregorian month, yeah. Okay, good. So the 27th is the day that people have to look forward to.
Exactly.
That. So you mimicked the medical school match, the residency match, right?
Precisely.
So now people will be waiting on the 27th. Just like college kids now, I think they wait till April 1st. Mm. All the colleges announce... Isn't that the case? All colleges announce if the kids made it to school?
I don't know. It's been a while for me.
I think it's something like that. So that's really exciting. The 27th, you find out if anyone's matched up with you.
Exactly.
That doesn't mean they're interested in you. That means your matchmakers found you compatible.
Exactly.
All right. So that's really good because oftentimes people say they contact these matchmaking operations and they keep calling, right? Mm-hmm. Did I get anyone? But you're basically saying, we'll go through everybody, and on the 27th, we shoot a bunch of emails.
Yeah. And, like, you can sign in if you have somebody, and we have somebody for you, alhamdulillah.
You sign in, and you'll see your results.
Exactly.
Only on the 27th. That's good.
So that's the first wave. So there's three waves per drop.
Okay.
So you sign on the 27th. Muhammad sees, let's say he sees Ayah.
Yeah.
And so we present pictures and the rest of the profile. So he sees Aya's pictures, he's physically attracted, he looks at her profile, he thinks that she's amazing on paper, he says yes. Unfortunately, Aya looks at his profile and says, honestly, he's kind of ugly, and says no. Something that, you know, she's more than valid to say no to.
Fair enough.
So they had 24 hours to make this decision. On the next day of the month, the 28th, the second wave is released. Let's say Muhammad matches with Fatima. And they look at each other's profile, they're both, you know, open to getting to know each other, and they both say yes. So at that point, the contact information appears on the screen, and then they take it from there.
But that means that the person has to check on the 27th, mm-hmm. go over, and then say yes or no within 24 hours.
Exactly.
And people do, they follow up within 24 hours?
So we have 95% of people will go through and, you know, review the match that they have.
And they get a notification on their phone, or is it through?
They get texts, they get emails, they get...
So you shoot them on the 27th, all my devices will be going off.
Yeah.
My email, my text, everything.
That's the goal.
That's the goal. And then the person sees a file, does he have to reply and say, yes, I'm interested, or is there a button?
There's a button. Say, accept or reject.
So he doesn't... That's it.
Yeah.
A check or an X.
Very simple.
Okay, that's great. So that information goes back to you.
Mm-hmm.
Is that automated now? That automatically on the 28th, it's going to get...
Yeah.
The email will go back that this person's interested in you?
Yeah, everything is automated.
So that's actually really simple if you think about it,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, I don't have to sit around waiting and feel disappointed and reload
yeah.
that no one's interested in me. I don't have all month to be swiping away and doing all that. I'll just wait until the 27th. If anything comes, it comes. It doesn't come. You know, there used to be a company that you show them the kind of clothes that you want, that you regularly wear. Some people, they don't have any time for shopping. And then they'll just send you a bunch of clothes that's within the range. And they'll send you a bag. If you don't like it, you just put it back, put the sticker, throw it out your door.
Mm.
If you like it, then you pick up your phone, open the app, and pay for it.
I feel like that's like the way that it should be. Like, I don't want to have to go shopping and pick
exactly.
stuff up.
Exactly. So,
unless you have an idea.
Jeans are jeans. So, why do I need to go around? Dude, they just send you a whole bunch of jeans. And then you just pick whatever you want.
Yeah.
So, now, this is really what I'm really impressed with, I have to be honest, is the efficiency of it.
Mm.
And the idea that I don't have to sit there waiting every single day for some news. It'll come to me on the 27th.
Exactly.
All right, now I have to ask you this. Hey, Adi, are you here? This AC is on for some reason. It's getting cold back here. All right, question for you. Tell me about the number of people that you have on the thing, because that'll give people an idea of of what are my chances.
So we have around 1,800 people in the system.
Well, that's great. That is great. People, listeners, you can join right now. I know some of you in the comments section. I know that you live in America and that you're single. Okay. So, a long time ago, but in our experience, in the last few generations, it hasn't existed. How do people get married?
Mm.
If your mom and dad are very social and very keen and they have it in their mind, they can create an environment for you by making a bunch of family friends. We all sort of know each other, know of each other, and people will always think of your kids when they're thinking of marriage, and it happens, right? And you encourage it and you talk about it. A lot of families don't do any of that. They're like almost, we can say, oblivious to, they're oblivious to this.
So, you know, Sheikh, I actually would call it almost a marriage crisis.
It is a crisis.
You have a ton of young people who are trying to find somebody, and you don't really have any options.
Yeah.
I think the numbers, depending on what stat you're looking at, it's between 40 and 60% of people of new relationships, they're meeting online. But what do we have as Muslims? We have two major swipe-based apps, which really it's what they have is the volume, because it's really easy to access and pick up. But in the US, and the UK is really far ahead of us, but in the US, we don't really have a third option. We have those two and nothing else. So that's
what is your comp? Who are your competition? By the way, we're gonna have another crisis of coldness if someone doesn't get the air conditioned remote here. Okay, so who's your competition? Let's talk about that.
So we got Salams and Muzz.
Salams, never heard of it. Muzz Match, heard of it.
So they're basically the same thing.
And then you have Minder.
So that's Salams.
It is Salams.
Yeah, they rebranded.
Okay.
Yeah, they didn't want to get sued.
They got really? Okay.
So Muzz got sued, and Minder didn't want to get sued.
Why did Muzz get sued?
Because they were called Muzz Match and Match Group, which owns Tinder, Hinge, a few of these. Now Salams, they just bought Salams. So one of the biggest Muslim dating apps in the space is now owned by the same group that owns all of the other dating apps.
Mm.
So. I mean, I think that kind of gives an indication of like where
the direction it's headed.
Yeah.
Now those apps are, you can look at people all day and be swiping right and left.
Mm.
And if they happen to swipe and you swipe in the same direction, then it sends you a message.
Yeah. You just got a notification on your phone saying, hey, you matched.
You matched. Okay. Yeah. And then you take it from there.
Yeah, but most people don't. You have the issue of plethora of choice.
Yeah.
So you can have like 15, 20 matches, and all you've done is look at their picture and see if you find them attractive. Because a lot of these people don't have actual profiles. So it's literally strictly based off of your physical attraction to them and not much else.
Here's a complaint that a lot of people have, is that the pictures aren't authentic. Like, the pictures are... Hey, guys, can you see the air conditioning thingy in there? No, Ali took it.
Maybe this window's open. Is there a window here?
No, it's not the window. It's the AC. And the shade is not. So tell me something. A lot of people, they doctor their picture too much. It's like, I get a little bit, right? But sometimes you don't even know that that's you. I have seen faces of people online in their profile picture, then met them in person and did not know they were the same person. Right?
I think, unfortunately, that's just the reality. But I mean, like you said, like you said this in another one of your videos, of take it off the digital. Mm-hmm. Meet in person, you know, that's like where you budding relationships can actually form, is actually seeing somebody face to face. But I think the issue is that with the current apps out there, people aren't taking it off the digital. You can, frankly, if I wanted to create an app right now, as a now, alhamdulillah, married guy, I can download an app and then be speaking to somebody and then have their number and text them privately within 5 minutes of my decision to download the app in the first place. Mm. Download it, swipe, find somebody, text them, boom. I can now text them. And so that's an issue that a lot of people are having on these apps too, as well as catfishes, which is like where you use different pictures. But also there's married people on these apps who are saying that they're single. I have a friend who was telling me that they heard a story about there's a couple that was recently divorced.
Yeah.
And both sides were now on the apps again. And both of them were saying that they weren't married before.
Oh, lying.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be funny if they matched.
It would be. I think overall I would describe it as a crisis, just because there's nothing out there. People are going to get married somehow. We may as well provide solutions that are halal and in line with our deen.
So salams and maz are the same thing.
Essentially, copy same paste. Thing.
So why don't they just buy both? Same company, that company. That
the Muzz brother company. Doesn't want to sell.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what about these other ones that Baba Ali has one, right?
Mm.
What is that all about? What is that called?
So that's...
Half your deen.
Half your deen.
So what's that all about?
Okay. So basically, for a little bit of context, is that we're now working specifically with Masajid. This is something that we've been building up over the last few months. We have 50 Masajid that are on board, including NBIC. Mawad is now going to be a part of In Paris Masjid, this new product that we're going to be launching very soon. And something that a pitch that I was using when I was trying to close all of the Masajid in Jersey was my experience on Half Your Deen. I think Half Your Deen, Baba Ali does a really amazing job of doing in-person events. I've heard that they're unparalleled with respect to doing things in person. He's very engaging, he's very authentic, and people love him.
Okay.
However, my experience with the online platform was less than positive. I think it's really just a volume thing. They don't have enough people on there, and they're global.
I see.
So they have around 2,000. My guess is they have around 2,000 users globally. So we're not huge. We only have around 1,800 users, but they're all based in the US and Canada because that's the only places that we operate.
Okay. And of course, when you match, I see here on your website that you have human matchmakers here.
Yeah.
It's not some kind of software that's matchmaking everybody.
So something that we're doing is, it's not a software. Yeah. Something that we are building, though, is a matchmaker AI. So AI is like a really fancy buzzword that everybody likes to use.
Yeah.
But we essentially what we're doing is that we're training a model based off of matchmaker data and successful matches. So these are matches where they've already both said yes. So the goal is that when you have, like, you know, looking at scale, 10,000, 20,000 users, it's a little impractical to have, you know, 600 matchmakers working on the team.
So that's why if you have almost like a multiple choice or answer with one word, then your algorithm or your whatever AI can very easily sift through 100,000.
Exactly.
Right. So if you have 20 questions, but the questions aren't open-ended answers, their questions are like with certain keywords that are used, then that's easy to do.
So the AI portion is basically... There's two parts to our algorithm. Yeah. The first one is that we do filter all of the basic stuff. So like ethnicity preferences, height preferences, educational preferences, things like that. The matchmakers then look at all of the qualitative information. So the about you, the role that Islam plays in your life, things like that.
Yeah.
So there's about six questions that you can answer freely. that's a big, the meat of where the matchmakers are evaluating for compatibility is in those answers. So the matchmaker AI is also going to be looking primarily at those answers to kind of figure out how people mesh together.
Wonderful. So let me ask you a question, because you, believe it or not, somebody asked me to help out with a matrimonial event. So I have no clue what to do with such a thing. Like, tell me, what is a good matrimonial event look like?
So I think it's a very difficult question to answer.
Yeah.
I think half our deen, or half your deen, comes close to what a really good event looks like. That being said, I think they're so difficult to do. And us personally, or me personally, have no interest in doing anything in person, because it's very difficult to execute well. And it just...
But what does it entail?
Essentially, it depends on the group. But the general idea is that you curate a list of 50 men and 50 women to come in, probably around the same age group, overlapping ethnicity preferences. And overlapping, again, age preferences. And then you bring them into maybe like the masjid ballroom or some kind of hall. Mm-hmm. And then you run a few events for them.
Like
so,
what?
So what I've seen at an event that I really liked really well with Suhba Institute with Imam Mahed and Houston, mm-hmm. they have just round tables. And they bring up particular topics, whatever it may be, like kind of the dynamic between man and wife in a household, favorite TV shows, just anything to get a conversation flowing.
With a small group of people.
With a small
group. Not one and one. Mm-mm. We're like three and three.
Exactly.
So this takes actually a lot of manpower then.
It's not easy.
And space too.
Yeah.
Oh, but that's a great idea though. So you have, let's say you split up your room into seven parts. Mm. And then you go three and three guys, three men, three women per table.
Yeah.
Right. But how do you choose which three men and which three women?
I think it's like pretty random, honestly, for the most part. You can try to screen through them.
Yeah.
But it's largely random. And what you do is that you rotate out the three.
So yeah, you keep. So you're only going to sit with those three women, right,
yeah.
one time. The yeah. guys could stay, the gender groups can stay the same. That doesn't matter, right? Yeah. And then they shift around. So you can't just do an open-ended, hey, where's a matrimonial, everyone come in. You actually really need to limit and focus the age, right?
Yeah.
You focus the age groups.
Exactly.
And then you need to know everyone's name in advance and maybe give them a number. Mm. So you say everyone, say like 1, 2, and 3, male and female go there.
Yeah.
Then 1, 2, and 3 will stay.
Exactly.
Then you only shift the other gender, mm-hmm. right? So you don't need to shift two genders. You shift one gender only around.
So the thing is that if you don't do this, like with the age stratification, even during the sign-up point, what you'll have is that, this is a complaint I've heard at a lot of in-person matrimonial events, is that there's no screening in age. And so what you'll have is you'll have like a 50-year-old ammu who has like, you know, a family, maybe recently divorced.
Yeah, that's a waste of time for someone who's in their 20s, let's say.
But the thing is that what you'll have is that you'll have the ammus chatting like the 20-year-olds. And so nobody's happy. The ammu is like upset that he's being rejected by the 20-year-old. The 20-year-old is upset that she's having a 50-year-old trying to get to know her at what she thinks is supposed to be a conducive environment to finding a relationship.
So you have to limit the age to what, 10 years?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
25 to 35.
That's like, in my opinion, the perfect age range.
Okay, 25 to 35. Do you limit the numbers?
Yeah.
20, 30 people or what?
I think if you go like above 100 people total, it's just too difficult to manage.
It's a mess, yeah.
But if you don't have enough people, then you know the chances to find somebody that you're compatible with are low.
So 40.
Yeah.
45.
I would say actually more than that. I would say like maybe 50 at the lowest end.
When would you cancel an event? At how many people would you cancel an event?
49.
You would cancel the event?
Yeah.
There's 49 men and 49 women.
Oh, no. 49 total.
49 total. Why would you cancel that at 49?
Because I think...
So let's say that's 25 and 25.
Let's say I have a pool of 10 people that I'm trying to matchmake with.
Okay.
There's 5 guys, 5 girls. The likelihood that the nasib of either one of these people or any of these people within this group of 10 is very low. It might happen. Allahu a'lam. But it's very low. If I have a million people that I'm working with, it's much higher.
So you need 30 and 30 minimum, you're saying.
I think if you don't have that number, then you're not, like, the odds of having compatibility in that group are on the lower end.
Cancel the event.
Yeah.
Altogether. Okay. That's really, really good. I never thought about that.
Yeah.
All right. So I love this idea of the little conversation starter thing. Mm. What are some of the things that they discuss in these conversation starters?
Mm. At in-person events,
do you keep it completely neutral, or do you bring serious topics?
No. There's a they bring in some controversial ones. So, all right, there's questions that you
like
need off to
data?
Know. No. Let's. I think more of like housewife. You know, like, do you expect the person that you're with to be a housewife, or if you're a woman, do you? Is that some like a position that you want to be in?
That's a complete. You know, here football is suicide pass. Yeah, like a guy's running across the field, and there's a safety behind him, and like a linebacker in front of him, and you throw in the ball. It's called the suicide pass because he's gonna get killed. You throw it to him right in the middle of the field. It's called the suicide pass, basically. That question: what do you think a wife should do? That is almost like a suicide question for a guy. He can never answer it right.
Never.
Right?
And the way that I saw this happen is that it was kind of like a range of people. So if you stood at one end of the room, you're like very much like whatever she wants to do, I'm happy with.
Yeah.
The other end of the room was if you stand there, it's like my wife will be a housewife.
Yep.
That's a non-negotiable for me.
I actually figured it out. I think the phrase is traditional but flexible, right? Mm. Because you give yourself so much room now, right? You keep your foundations right, but you have room to move,
yeah.
Right? To maneuver. And every situation is going to be different in life.
Yeah.
All right, keep talking. What are some of the other questions that they say?
Let's see. With respect to in-person events, like a conversation starter, it can really be anything. The goal is to spark conversation. Again, this is something that you mentioned in some of your other podcasts is you want to see like how people interact, whether it's over a serious topic or a light topic. You're not going to be spending the entirety of your life speaking about serious topics with your spouse. And so it doesn't make sense to, when you're first engaging with them, only speak about serious. Obviously you should make sure that you are discussing all of the important topics,
but
you also have to make sure that like, this is somebody that I can like live with at some point.
Yeah.
And if one person's like very loosey goosey and then the other one's very, very strict, and there's going to be some incompatibility there.
The serious topic is, it's in a sense negative because you're giving them only what, like 20 minutes and there's six people. So everyone's going to talk for 3-4 minutes, and the serious topics, you may actually want to need more time. You need to pry into those serious topics.
Yeah.
So maybe something neither silly nor serious is what you're looking for, right?
Yeah. Okay. Something in the middle.
And how many minutes do you do this thing for?
The ones that I've been to have been about 3 hours. So
the whole event is 3 hours. What and is it consist totally of these little discussion groups?
No. So there's a lot of variety. And again, there's one event that I thought that was executed well, was they had these roundtable discussions. They had these kind of like listing out an opinion, and then the people will stand at different parts of the room to indicate like where they stand on it.
Yeah.
And then they concluded with a project. And basically you had like, I think it was like 30 minutes to come up with a business idea with like a set of materials that you had in front of you. And you had to sell it and pitch it. It was like a pitch competition at the end, and then there was a group of judges. The judges had to decide which ideas were the best. And again, really, it's not about the pitch.
It's just making them talk, making them think and stuff.
Exactly.
Making them interact. All right, so that's actually really clever. I never thought about that. So I wonder, in the grand scheme of things, if you were to pitch that first topic, was to be say something funny about yourself.
Mm.
And you'd have to tell them in advance that this is going to be something. Because humor, it really brings people together a lot faster than serious issues.
Yeah.
Like for me and you to agree about an issue is one thing, but for me and another person to laugh about something, there's a quicker bond right there. So I wonder if at one table you had a serious topic, another table you had a humorous topic. I think the reactions would be totally different, right?
I think the goal is to have every person see both sides of a potential spouse.
Yeah.
And so like what you'll have is that you'll have like an initial group of people and then ask them the serious question, and then you rotate. And once you get back to that same first group of people, the initial formation, then you ask a lighthearted question.
I see.
Because then, or maybe even like the vice versa, like to break the ice so that everybody feels a little bit more comfortable being honest and open with each other.
Yeah.
Because you, again, you can like, you can engage in much more serious topics.
Yeah.
More candidly, if you're kind of on the same page with somebody about.
That's true.
You're already having a good vibe, so to say.
So let's say you had, let's say you had 30 men and 30 women, then 10 locations throughout the hall. With 10 different subjects, and that allows everybody to sit, to rotate through. If, I don't know if I'm getting my math right with that. Everyone gets to sit with every other person at least for 10 minutes.
If you do 20 rotations.
That's 100 minutes. Okay, that's almost 2 hours.
Yeah.
So, and each one will have a total different subject. Like one will be a subject, another be maybe like... I don't know what different subjects that someone would have to be clever to pick that are completely different. That's almost 2 hours of an event. What about food at these events? Is that a waste of time? Because food is for yourself. You're not going to be, and you might not be want to be seen eating, right?
Well, I think, okay. So the
maybe
point,
just some finger food to start or what? What do you do about food in a matrimonial event?
Here's my take, is that you're there to get to know somebody.
Yeah.
So the goal is to find somebody and have a connection. And you're forming connections in groups, but maybe, let's say if there's like a break halfway through and you had a really good connection with somebody earlier on, you can spend like a 5-10 minute coffee break to go and chat with somebody that you were previously, you know, that you think things might go well with. Mm-hmm. Get to know a little bit more on the side as opposed to... in this massive group setting where everybody else is trying to get to know the same person.
Repeat. So in the middle of an event, if someone clicks with another person, they go off to the side?
I think, not to the side, like not like, you know, outside of the mission, but like, it's just like somewhere like in the room, you're just having a one-on-one conversation in the greater room. So everybody's there.
But you pull out of the event. You're in the same room, but you're like, all right, I'm skipping the next table.
No. This is like at a coffee break or something.
Oh, so you have breaks.
Yeah.
And in those breaks, people get to go and tell one of the matchmakers, I'm interested in contestant number 25.
Yeah.
And they got name tags?
Yeah. They have name tags and like ages usually.
I see. So those breaks are important.
Yeah. You only speak, I don't know, everybody's kind of nervous. Like you're still... You're in a vulnerable position where you're trying to get to know somebody. You're putting yourself out there. Yeah, you dress nice so that you can, you know, put on a good representation of yourself. So sometimes you just need those 5-minute breaks to kind of recuperate.
Okay, and let me ask you this: so, what's the most efficient way to transmit that piece of information? I would assume, for example, you get a pen and you get a paper with everyone's the opposite gender's name, like mini golf, right? You get a little pencil, and you get the paper. And then let's say you sit in the first round table and a person is interested in, let's say, I don't know, Fulan.
Yeah.
So you look at, you find his name there and you circle it or you fill in a bubble or something. Then in the break or at the end of the event or in the break, you give it to the person.
I think that's one method of doing it.
You put your name at the top.
So I think there's some people that would prefer to just go up and like let the sister know or let the brother know like, hey, I'm interested. Would you like to get to know each other? There's some people that would like that don't feel comfortable being, you know, that upfront. And so you can just go to the facilitator and say, hey, you know, sister Maryam, I'm interested in her. Would love to get to know her.
But how could you be not how could you be uncomfortable? The whole purpose of the whole operation that you're there. You walk through the door. Everyone knows a matrimonial event is happening. Right. This is not in a private place. You're in a masjid. We all saw you walking in. Right. So there is no shame in the whole subject. We have to have no shame in the whole subject. So when you get there, it makes no sense to be shamed, to be embarrassed, to say that I'm interested in so-and-so. Mm. Like, what is the purpose that you're here?
I think it's just a lot easier to get rejected when it's not to your face. You know, if I go up to...
Oh, well, you're not going to go to the person. You're going to go to a matchmaker.
That's what I'm saying, is that you can, like, either go up to the person directly or
no,
you can go up
weird.
To the matchmaker.
No, that's so weird. That is so weird. Go up to the person directly is too weird.
That's
no, you
got
to go
like,
to the matchmaker.
Yeah, yeah. No, you go to the match. Of course, that's like what you're there for, you know?
Yeah.
But
okay,
if you
I thought
go
you meant
her,
they're embarrassed to go up to the matchmaker.
No.
Okay. So that makes sense. So in this case, you need a staff of people there.
Yeah.
You can't just have an event with 2-3 hosts.
Usually have a few facilitators, maybe like 4 or 5.
Facilitators, they're called. Yeah. Okay, very good. Really good.
But I think I have a few questions that I'd love to...
go ahead. I mean, I'm always interested in people and their work, but go ahead. What are your questions?
So I think, okay, obviously, what we're doing is that, like, I have InPairs, you know, this matrimonial service. You have Starboard, which is...
Starboard is our mentorship program, yeah.
Awesome. Is that launching or has that been launched?
It's in a soft launch mode right now, and some of our people want to launch via matrimonial events.
Okay.
And I got and all this, I never ever imagined myself to be involved in this. Mm. And most recently, our sheikh in Yemen, Habib Omar, when people told him our life is not the same, people are having trouble getting married, he's the one who suggested these kinds of events take place.
Okay.
He didn't specify, but he just said they need to come and see each other, right?
Yeah.
So when I heard it from him, I started to get a little bit more acceptance of being involved in such a thing. But commonsensically, looking around, sometimes you see such qualified brothers. Mm. And the sad thing about it, it's like a sports career. Like, the clock is ticking, right? The clock is ticking. Unlike other careers, you could be, like, not great at business for years and then do well. You learn over time. Like, the founder of McDonald's, he stunk until the age 50. He didn't sell anything.
Really?
Yeah.
No way.
You don't know about this Ray Kroc? He was just, like, selling, like, milkshake mixers.
Yeah.
And he was 52 years old when he discovered McDonald's.
No way.
And he worked so hard to obtain it. And he eventually, first he got the rights to franchise it. Then he eventually bought it out. Mm. He came up with ideas to make it work.
Right? Oh, so he didn't even start it.
He stole it.
Oh.
He stole it. He was a gangster. But okay. He outsmarted them. He outsmarted them, nabbed it, but he was really dishonest in the final. They were also very naive.
Yeah.
Right? And they never saw a penny of McDonald's after that.
No way.
They got their initial check, and that was it.
You know, right? I feel like you said his name is Ray what?
Ray Kroc.
I feel like a Ray Kroc owning McDonald's is not what I was expecting.
Yeah,
I was expecting like Ray McDonald's.
The actual McDonald's family never eat from McDonald's because of what he did to them.
That's valid.
But what he did is ultimately he realized that you don't make money off the sandwiches, the burgers. You make money off the rent.
Yeah.
So so own the land. So be a real estate company buying land on the corners of these major highways, then franchise it out and make the franchisor rent from you.
Interesting.
And that's why eventually there was like 100 stores, and they said to him, "Hey, listen, we want to change a menu item," and he's like, "Nah," and they're like, "What do you mean, nah? We run the whole thing." He's like, "You think so? Mm. I own all the land, right?" I own all the land.
Oh, so the McDonald's people said this, or like
he's their franchisor, yeah. Right? But he set up another company and forced all the franchisees to rent from him.
No way.
So he's like, yeah, you might have 100, but I own the land on 99 of them.
Yeah.
Right. I own all the land. He got investors, of course. Mm-hmm. Right. And so he said, I'm actually in charge here because I'll put you out of business tomorrow.
Yeah.
So they had to sell, and he gave him a check. And they said, well, what about our percentages? You got to give it at least 2% of everything, right? Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, the investors didn't want that. Let's make a handshake agreement for that. And they agreed. And of course, they're not going to see anything.
Yeah.
They didn't see a penny after that.
No way.
Yeah. But the point being is that in marriage, it's a scary clock. Mm. It's not like other things in life that can marinate over time. Wisdom can marinate over time. Money can grow over time. Mm. But marriage, if the clock is ticking on you. Right.
So is there a prime time to get married?
Yeah, like right out of college, because that's when you know a lot of people. Mm. You're still young, and I have to say, you don't want to be too smart when you get married. You'll make it so complicated for yourself. You want to be just like enough to know character and the basics of life.
Yeah.
But if you're too advanced and you know human nature and you're too smart for your own good, you're never going to make the decision. If you realize how huge the decision is, it also paralyzes you too.
Yeah.
So I think if your life is too advanced and her life is too advanced, it's like a merger between two huge companies.
Yeah, basically.
Chances are it's never going to happen, right?
When do you think that you've gotten to the point where, like, okay, you're now out of this window, and if you're not just going to find somebody organically, you're going to have to try to start investing in something?
I would say 3 years out of college.
Like 24, 25?
If you're 3 years out of college and you hit age 25 and you have no prospects over,
yeah,
then you need to get in pairs or something else.
So just, you know, while we're talking about in pairs, just for the plug, now that I've mentioned a little bit to you about how it works, what do you think about in pairs as opposed to some of the other services that you might have heard
about? No, I'm really impressed because you know that Omar has been talking to me about this and I'm like not paying attention. Right. But, and I wanted to come into this totally raw, which I did. I didn't even know who you were, what you were, or what your organization was about.
Awesome.
And I kept thinking that he's telling me in pairs. And I thought, and I thought it's an organization for the hearing impaired, right? So no, they're not hearing impaired. They're impaired in another facet of life, right? So, but what you told me about the simplicity of it, I became really impressed. I didn't ask you one more question on your process.
Yeah.
After the 28th, when the two have matched and they've agreed to each other, what do? You just shoot them an email with both on the CC?
So it's the screen will auto-populate with each other's contact information, and then they can take it from there.
Then you leave them.
We've done our job.
Okay, good.
With the InPairs Masjid product that we're coming out with. So basically, InPairs Masjid is that we're working with local masajid across the U.S.
Yeah.
And that we're building in a wedi system. So instead of having her number, it's her wedi's number.
Yeah. Okay, that's very good. I'm a big believer in that. I know it's very contentious subject. Do you approach a sister directly? Sometimes they don't want you to go to their dad, which is weird. Mm. But sometimes they don't have that kind of relationship with their family. They want to screen first because the family may be too difficult.
So,
or maybe that's just how they are. They don't have those traditional, and I would say Islamic backgrounds. Not so everyone does.
On this topic, okay, you're right. This is very contentious.
Yeah,
and I've seen both ends of the extreme. So I've seen like brothers who they're talking to their secret girlfriends for like 3-4 years, and then they'll bring it to the wedi.
Yeah, I think that's really bad.
Absolutely, that's definitely not the way that we should be doing it. But I've seen the other end, and I don't know if this is if I can say that this is the best way. Mm-hmm. Of every single time they're getting to know a sister, from day one when they're first meeting, they'll see like kind of like a brief picture and a profile, and if they're happy with that, they will bring their entire family to meet her entire family.
That's a bit overkill too.
The issue is that the brother is also very picky, the one that I'm thinking about in particular. So he'll go 4 or 5 times a year to see different families. And every time it ends up, you know, without it working out. So is there what's the middle ground?
You're asking basically what should be said to someone, the brother who's too picky?
Both the brother who's too picky, but then also when is the appropriate time to bring in the wedi? Is it day one? Is it after a week of getting to know each other?
Well, let's think about it as you raised a girl for 19 years of her life, 20 years, right? Now, as a practicing Muslim goes to the masjid, you're close with your family. And that's the foundation, the framework we're talking about. Now, if a guy goes and he's trying to get to know your daughter at school and stuff, and he's very serious and he works and everything, don't you consider the noble route to talk to you, right? And say, I'm not proposing, I'm just would like to get to know your family, right? Not to know your daughter. Or someone from his side says that to you. To me, that would be the commonsensical thing, right? Now, I understand. At school, you're going to interact with someone so much. In work, you may interact with someone a lot. And they get to know each other. But that's different to me, in my eyes. So he and her may know each other well enough that he's already made up his mind that he wants to propose or get to know her at least. But to actually take those steps, to me, it just doesn't sit right. Like, why would you take those steps without telling her family? And we're talking about families. And I get it. Not everyone has a family in the first place or has this kind of family. I assume a lot of you guys know what I'm talking about, right? That the idea of you have an intact family, that you wouldn't go and propose to let's say a family friend's daughter and talk to her on the side about this big subject and bypass her family. Like, doesn't sit right with us. So at least give us, tell us something. I would expect a noble person to do that.
I think the idea is like, I want to figure out if this is even worth pursuing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really know much about this sister.
You're not proposing. You're just coming to get to know. That's it.
But do you think that, and this is kind of like after, again, this is my line of work, right?
Yeah.
So something that I'll hear often from men is that there's a lot of, and from women, is that there's a lot of familial pressure once you bring somebody home. Of like, now this is not like, I'm not bringing somebody home to get to know. Like, I'm bringing somebody home to, you know, talk about marriage with. Like, this is what is happening now. We're following the marriage track.
You know, the Quran says, قَدِّمُوا لِأَنفُسِكُمْ. Like, don't do something so huge right away. It's a shock. So one of the simple ways to do it is, let's say you're interested in a certain person. Say, all right, we're not going to put you at the table together. That's too awkward and too... She may reject you, whatever. So you have a some kind of gathering. There are dinners all the time, people having dinners, people just coming over for tea and coffee, or there's an event at the masjid, and you can cross paths, right? So that's like the first meeting, let's say. You can cross paths. You can, I remember one person, the men were sitting in the basement and the daughters and the women were upstairs. And they kept sending one of the sons, oh, go give this to your mom. Go send this to your mom. And then they would have one of the girls, oh, go pick it up. It was like on a plate or a tray. That was their actual way of making them see each other and interact. This is before the day of digital, right? So
did it work?
Yeah, it worked out.
They're married?
Yeah.
No way.
It worked out, yep.
Wait, so
and,
what was...
And then he realized, my mom was... It was a trick, right? to get the two to cross paths, right?
How does one even coordinate this, like, from the parents' perspective? Is this a conversation you have beforehand? Like, we're trying to set our kids up?
Well, it's different scenarios. Sometimes you have scenarios where kids are pretty young and sheltered, and the parents are very involved.
Yeah.
Right? And frankly, those are the easiest... Because they listen to their parents, right? Mm. And I know we're living in a generation at a time that people don't do that, and they wouldn't even fathom it. But what I'm saying is that doesn't have to be a direct meeting right away in any circumstance, because that could be too awkward. But I would expect at some point, someone let me know that you're talking to my daughter. That's what I. And if my son would do that, I would say the same thing. Like, at least tell us. We could actually help you. Make this legitimate and good.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think something that I'm curious to know is that obviously I'm sure you've heard a million and one stories on this, but can you tell me about a time that when there's a couple that they tried to do things the right way and then maybe it's not working out with respect to bringing it to the family? And
I've heard a lot more of the opposite.
Really?
A lot more of people trying to do it the wrong way. And not only that, he just becomes accustomed to it. And he almost becomes, whatever the term for it is, a guy who's able to get girls' number, chat them up for a little bit. Playboy. Yeah, like a type of version of that, right? Just, it's almost like he's flirting with his sister for a while, all in the under the auspices or under the intention of getting married, but he actually never does anything. Why? Because he's too many options. And he's not taking it seriously. It's like easy come, easy go. So, and those types, I don't think they need matrimonial events or people. They're not trying to do it the right way. They go around fishing, and I see them going fishing for the next 10 years, right?
I think that this is like an issue that a lot of, an issue that a lot of Muslim men have based off what you're saying is commitment issues. Do you think that kind of, running through the reps of talking to girls, getting their numbers, not having it work out, that builds up to long-term commitment issues?
Well, I can only tell you, I can't make a principle out of it, but I can only tell you what I've seen. Right? And from what I've seen, it's usually like a trend. And this person's always, he's got, constantly has some girl that he's talking with, and it just seems to never work out. Right? And I think maybe, possibly, it's not treated seriously enough. Right.
So With respect to actually setting people up then,
yeah.
Do you think that there's value in having somebody who is looking at this objectively from a third party?
The thing is, that I think that's fine too. Like something like this, a third party is looking and saying that you two match up and everything. But the question then is, what does he do when he receives the information? Mm. All right, I've matched. I'm interested in this profile, and she's interested in my profile. And I'm saying profile because you haven't even met yet.
Yeah.
It's just your profiles match up. So now you got two options. There are guys who become very timid. They're so slow. They're so hesitant to act, which is, like, that's why you have family. You have a dad. You have a mom, right? And if you have a connection, family connection, you should use it, right? And maybe the mom will talk to the other mom. Now, I may be so off on this because a new generation will just not do that.
Mm.
But then, well, what does the guy do then? He's now facing the fear that I can approach and screw up the approach, right?
Yeah.
And that's why it's better to send in a blocker. A running back doesn't just run straight through the defense. He doesn't try to run in front of the linebackers and the safeties.
Yeah.
You send a blocker.
Yeah.
Hey, let him get hit all day, right? So you send, it's like there is a reason for that, right? Hijab and Mastura. I don't want to go face this scenario by myself. Most people won't. Very few people will be okay with the awkwardness, right?
Yeah.
Send in a blocker. Send in someone to get the rejection for me, right? Or he clears the way and things are better for me, right? So, again, I say it's contentious because I don't know how people are thinking. Some people are very totally disconnected from the family and they're just doing things on their own.
So I think with this respect of having somebody else kind of like facilitate, right? Do you think that maybe if this is what you've seen as best practice, how do you feel then about the apps where you're having a direct line to the other person? There's no there's no filtered process, no adulteration on it.
It forces eventually one of the parties to come up with a way of talking that is a clear suggestion, but also not forcing the opposite side, mostly the woman, to have to reject the person.
Mm.
So they have to come up with the right language to talk.
That's fair.
And all right, let's take a hypothetical. Two people, they have no families.
Okay.
Maybe they weren't raised like that. Maybe their families aren't involved because there is a lot of that, right? So the guy should be, I think he's usually viewed as the one who is proposing, right? And he's got to learn the language of expressing, like, what is the next stage?
Yeah.
Are we just going to get to know each other? How long is this going to go on for? How are we going to get to know each other? Are we just going to text back and forth? Are we going to meet? Where are we going to meet? How are we going to meet? Are we going to meet alone with people? So he needs like a little playbook to figure out what's the next step because he's all on his own.
Yeah.
And it's totally fathomable in cities where there's like employment but not families. Like New Jersey is an area where his family's been here for ages, right? But I could tell you probably places in middle of America, maybe Seattle, people get hospital jobs he's alone, she's alone. They're all on their own. So they also need a route. We can't pretend that those people don't exist. So then he has to come up with that middle language where it's clear what he wants to do, but it's not a direct question that she may feel bad rejecting him and therefore drag him on or give him a mixed message. That's what I'm worried about, like mixed messages in this, where neither side know what the actual truth is. And that's where I'm saying what family does is it helps eliminate those mixed messages without you having to directly reject somebody or propose yourself, throw yourself onto somebody.
Yeah. Having that like third party helps to grease the wheels of getting you from point A to point B, with point B ideally being marriage or knowing whether or not you will be.
Exactly. There's just a big difference between a person saying, I want to marry you. And then let's say that person's friend or representative or aunt or mom or dad going to their side and saying, yeah, he's ready and he's good to go. There's a big difference in that.
So question for you then, is obviously we're launching in Prisma Masjid and the goal is to help facilitate through Masajid. Do you think that there is a role to play now that Masajid in the US have shifted from being just musallas to Islamic centers, right? Where they functional, they do a lot more than just, you know, lead the five daily prayers. Do you think that there's a role for Masajid to play in matchmaking?
To be honest with you, I think matchmaking begins with the parents of middle schoolers.
Okay.
That's really where it starts.
Walk me through that.
Like, they need to know, they need to firstly talk to their kids about, and they need to think for themselves, what is needed for this person to be a viable candidate? Mm. So let's say for a guy, first he needs to not be known as somebody who's always with, hanging out with girls. He needs to not be known as someone who's always in the feeds commenting on other girls' Instagram posts, right? He needs to make sure that is not his reputation.
Yeah.
He needs to now have a serious career mind path and be mindful of that aspect of things. He cannot be a sort of a drifter who's daydreaming and has nice political ideas, nice philosophical ideas, but no actual skill. Mm. The faster he earns a skill, the faster everything moves in his life. So he's got to pick an industry where he could, he's employable. And then he needs to start being social. Like, how do you be social? With whom to be social? So if a guy is social with many, many other men, his reputation develops. We know him as a good young man, right? Those other guys have sisters. They got cousins. They have daughters. They have, you know, women that they know.
Yeah, they're connected to the community.
So community connection is really important. So the guy's personal and religious reputation and his competence. So in hadith, who do we accept from? Al-adl al-dabt, right? So adala is your reputation amongst in the community, in your deen, in your morals. Mm. Number two is your competence. As a husband, you need competence. The competence is going to be your social skills. Do you know how to talk? People have been around you. They know you're not weird. Mm. And you're competent in being able to earn. So you can set somebody up when it comes time for him to marry. It's not so difficult.
Yeah.
So that's why I would go to the parents of middle schoolers.
So let's say we're now past that point. Like there's a young man, early 20s. He's trying to lock himself down and find somebody.
Yeah.
But he feels like he's not quite there. Mm-hmm. What are things that he can be working on to develop himself for the sake of marriage?
Well, it's still those three things. What's your social network look like? You got people to vouch for you. You have people who would suggest you for marriage in the first place. Your reputation amongst them. And your competence in earning.
Yeah.
Like, these are the three main things. Right?
So with respect to earning, I think a topic that's very widely discussed. Mm-hmm. A topic that's very widely discussed is mahr. And so on the topic of mahr, something that I found is that as an Egyptian, going to try to meet a Palestinian family.
Total different world, exactly. By the way. Yeah, they have different rules. They have different expectations.
Very different.
Yeah. All Shuam and Egyptians have different ways of getting married.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how does, let's say a brother goes and he proposes to a sister and his goal is he has his expectations of what a mahar looks like, but then the family has very different expectations.
Yeah.
What's the best way to try to navigate that?
There was one time the dads tried to do it and they had a big fight. Egyptian-Palestinian, right? Big blow up.
Yeah.
Because, again, the Palestinian, the Shami tradition, obviously not speaking for everybody, but saying in general, the general Shami tradition is it's all on the husband. Mm. The whole thing, the whole shebang. We're not lifting a finger. The Egyptian side does have a little bit of a give and take where certain parties will be held by you, certain by us, and then certain things will be split. That so those discussions best to be done by your lawyers, counsel, right? You don't go in and have big negotiations yourself. Mm. You send your counsel to go and talk.
So who would the counsel be in this situation?
So let's say your dad and her dad, right? Let them have a discussion on it. Why? Because that's the first go around. if we're so far off, you don't want to be so far off with her dad, right? And usually, most cases, a woman doesn't negotiate her mahr. She may talk to tell her, but she doesn't directly negotiate her mahr, right? She'll tell her dad what she wants. But those are that's usually how it works. You have them discuss it so that if you're so far off, it's not you who's far off. And you could come in afterwards and say, okay, sorry, my dad was way off. Let's work this out and be the good guy.
Yeah.
There's a reason why they send in two interrogators. They send a good cop and a bad cop. Mm. It's always better to have two people involved so that one could do the stuff that could potentially be damaging to you. The dad can do that. He could bear that. Like yeah. I said earlier, he's the blocker, right, for these potentially contentious discussions.
What about, okay, I heard there's two stories that really kind of like left me, especially having recently been a part of these conversations or had these conversations. There's two stories that I heard, one of them in Jersey, one of them in SoCal, that really kind of blew me away. The first one in Jersey is that there's a brother who, you know, him and him, like he met her family, everything was going well. They'd been speaking for a few months. Everything was well and dandy. Then they started talking about mahr. And the father didn't like the son, or didn't like the potential groom. So he said, you know what, 150K mahr. And so the brother was like, I'm in love with this woman.
And she's in love with him?
Yeah.
Well, that's the problem right there. You're in love first, and then you get your parents involved. Why even waste your parents' time?
No, they did
just
everything.
Get married and khalas.
They did everything the halal way at that point. Like he went through the wedi in the beginning.
And he accepted him.
And he
let him have the second meeting.
He let him have the second
meeting. Then that wedi is a confused person. Why would you let him have the second meeting, right?
I don't know. I think they were also trying to get to know him at the same time.
Or is it that he passed the first meeting, he was good, and then by the time the wedi figured out that he's actually not good, they're already in love with each other.
I think that's what happened.
Yeah, that's an awkward situation.
Yeah. So, but what ended up happening in this situation is that the brother kept going. He was like, 150K? Meshi. And so he came up with the 150K over 3 years.
Egyptian pounds. Which is what, like 30K, right?
Way less than that.
Way
like
less than that.
3K.
Divided by 15.
No, but so he ended up raising, over the course of 3 years, he worked and then got the 150K for the mahr. Obviously, this isn't the ideal.
Yeah.
So how do you... if
that's a great guy.
I hope they're very happy because he earned it.
And the wedi, he didn't say, okay, no, I was just exaggerating.
He wanted to keep the daughter happy.
She needs 150K on the spot to be happy.
No, he wanted
marry
to
marry another woman.
Is that he set this crazy bar?
Yeah,
and then expected and was like, "There's no way that this guy is gonna hit this bar. Khalas, he's gonna leave. Like I'm pricing him out of my daughter."
Yeah,
and then what ended up happening is that he comes back a few years later. He's like, "Hey, I got the 150K you asked for," and the daughter obviously didn't want this. But the, you know, khalas, what's the father gonna say at that point? Like,
well, I personally find this wali to be off in the whole way he handled the whole thing.
So that's
not the way to do things.
So let's say the brother came to you in this position. Yeah. He's like, Sheikhna, they're asking for 150K.
Yeah.
What do you tell him?
I ask him, what is the dad's profession? Is he a real estate developer in Manhattan? Because that's a very low mahar if that's the case, right?
Let's say he's upper middle class.
Upper middle class. Then someone needs to talk to that guy. He's either telling you leave, it's giving you a hint to leave, or we can talk to him and wake him up a little bit.
Okay.
So that's why, again, why would you do something so difficult alone, right? You can leverage the people that you know, the your imams, your friends, to situations like this where we'd say, talk to the guy and get him back onto earth.
Okay.
With this mahr.
So there is like the opportunity for like outside kind of intervention when you're talking about mahr.
Of course, it's a negotiation like anything else. Okay. Yeah.
This other story, I'm a big fan of this story.
Yeah.
There was a brother, again, very interested in the sister, did everything the halal way. She was the one who set the bar for the mahr. And
that's makruh, by the way.
Is it?
Like for the Prophet ﷺ, he said the best woman is one who was easygoing with the mahr.
Okay.
Right. Like it's like a bad taste almost.
So I think she left a very bad taste. She asked for 100K.
If the dad does that, it's acceptable. Mm. Right. If the dad says, no, this is my daughter, so you have to pay a lot of mahr, a high mahar, that's acceptable. It's reasonable. It's understandable. But okay, anyway.
So she said, I want 100K.
Okay.
She also said, I want to go to medical school.
Oh, wait, on his tab?
On his tab.
Okay.
And I don't want to work after I graduate from medical school.
Well, what is the point of going to medical school then?
So this is just this to have
a,
the letters.
That's a really, really weird request.
But they loved each other. They were very happy with each other.
She obviously loves something else about him, right? What's his job? What was his job?
Not enough to afford this. I think he was like a consultant or something.
I think she loves herself.
I want you to guess anyway, how this worked out.
These are probably your friends who are cursing me right now in Georgetown.
These are people I was very shocked to hear these stories.
Okay.
Either way, they didn't work out. But
no kidding.
Yeah.
Right? Who is going to work out with such a ridiculous request? I'm going to disappear for 4 years, drain $500,000 from your accounts, and then not use it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, Jersey's different with the stories that you hear coming out of
Jersey.
I've heard a lot of really interesting stories about Mahdi here.
It's very good method of education on this subject. Just go by stories, right? To develop a norm here.
Mm.
All right, what else you got?
So what do you think, I suppose, to develop a norm, what do you think a fair asking amount is?
Firstly, where is this girl? She has advisors in her family? Like, where is her dad and mom to say, this is like, you're way off on this?
I think they're, again, in the position of, like, they want to keep the daughter happy. So you're asking for this much, even if you're going to be single for the rest of your life. If that's what you want to ask for it. And then there's, like, you know, parents who are actually being parents and saying, maybe this is a little out of the realm of reality.
Some people spoil their kids. Like, you have to wake up a little bit and be within a realm of reality. Now, by the way, that's why I said, what is their job? Because if they're all multimillionaires, 150K is a drop in the bucket. It's expected. If a millionaire family is proposing to another millionaire family, that's nothing for them. So that's it's orfi. That's why I'm saying it's orfi. But if you're saying like a regular person, that you said upper middle class, then that would be out of range. Then the range would be 10 to 50.
So in this situation, he was upper middle class. She was from a wealthy family. So in this position, like, what would you... Is this like a fair ask from her end to ask for this?
You have to meet in the middle because you're not living your way. You're not living his way. Maybe you meet in the middle. You have to meet in the middle somewhere. That's the thing. Some people, they care more about money than love. That's the truth. There are people out there, and I can tell you from what other women have told me. I'm not judging the women. I can't judge the women. I don't know them, but they have told me there are women, all they care about is the material aspect of life. This life is going to be comfortable. From here on, I will not worry about another penny. And I will have everything that I want. And if he's here, he's not, it doesn't make a difference. The personal element is not, think of it what you want, but some people are like that.
Yeah. Okay, fully off track, but this is just something that, again, we spoke about this previously, but something that I'm really curious about is your take on physical attraction when you're looking at somebody for the sake of marriage. What is your opinion on that?
I think, number one, it's extremely important for people to take care of themselves. And number two, if two people's hearts come together, provided that both sides are not repelled from one another, right? That's the key. So that is actually a lower bar than many people may put, right? You ask yourself the question, are you repelled from this person? And the answer is no, then you can proceed. Doesn't mean you're going to marry them, but you can proceed. Because you can come to love everything about them if you love the person.
Yeah.
So that's the advice that I heard from a sheikh when I was young. That's the question you ask yourself. Yeah. Is their deen good? For the man, is his character good? And then for both of them, is your deen good? And for both of them, are you repelled by them? Yes or no? And if the answer is no, then you can continue talking.
Yeah.
But if you are repelled, then no, then you don't marry them.
I really like that way of like approaching it, of you take out like, how attracted am I to this person? It's, am I attracted to this person? Yes or no? Maybe not, am I repelled to this person?
Yeah.
Like, do I find them offensive to look at?
Well, the reason I think they said that is that you can't really tell if somebody is, you don't know if you're attracted to them until you know their personality. Because that can make or break somebody.
Yeah.
Right? Somebody could be the most amazing personality, their views align with you, and but from the outset, it was just another face, right? But then once you see what they do and what how they act, then you start to love them.
Yeah.
And you love their face, right? And everything about them. So that's why the bar shouldn't be how attracted. And a lot of the guys who do have that kind of bar, they have to, they're the some of the guys who continue to stay single.
Yeah.
Because they're comparing against an imagination. Don't compare against an imagination. Compare against reality. And that imaginary person that you're thinking of would also have to like you. They have to exist, number one. Mm. Then they have to like you. So it's not like you're comparing against four options that are in front of you.
Yeah.
Like I can marry this person, this I can propose to each four of these people. That's different. But if you're just looking at one person and comparing them to an imagination in your head, you're in for a long road.
So what do you tell somebody who is very, to phrase this, what do you tell somebody who is very clearly picky only from the perspective of physical attraction? Like they won't speak to anybody that they find even remotely unattractive.
I personally don't advise those people. Some people can only learn by getting burned. Hmm. Keep for suffering, right? Keep acting like the way you're acting right now. Because if anyone was going to say something, his mom or dad should have told him this. A friend can't tell him this. Why would he listen to me? Hmm. Right? Continue to some people who are that spoiled and that picky, they won't learn from words. Like I from experience, they don't learn from words.
Yeah.
They learn simply from suffering. And eventually the clock keeps ticking like an athlete. It just your chances just every year that passes by, you're missing out until there comes a point your pool is so small, right? Your pool is so small that you're going to face the reality.
Yeah.
Right. Of what you cooked.
I feel like I've met a lot of guys who will have a certain bar that they're setting for themselves and then end up single into their 30s, not because they couldn't find anybody, but because of the people that they found, they just weren't hitting this imaginary bar that they've set.
Yep. And, you know, from the destiny perspective, that's going to be the risk of someone else, right? And sometimes people have hasad. They suffer from hasad in their life. And they may be like the number one you can imagine. This is the catch. Male or female, and who knows, maybe hasad affected their life and you see that their marriage situation really doesn't pan out to be anything that anybody imagined.
Yeah.
Right? And it's almost like a train wreck. So sometimes hasad, people get hasad in life. It is something. And sometimes people are so praised so much that they're living in La La Land.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah. I think something that again, having just had my nikah done a few weeks ago, something that we were very intentional about was not posting really anything on social media except for like saying like, hey, we're now in relationships. What do you think of this idea of people, as soon as they have their nikah done, they have these big, elaborate, you know, not just events, but then also posts that are all over social media afterwards?
I always get worried about those types of things, like sharing your personal life on social media. Some people say hasad cannot come through a screen, maybe, but a lot of people can really feel bad that your life is so good. So why would you make other people feel bad?
Yeah,
right. You'll make people feel that they're missing out. You make people feel that their life is no good. I don't like it. I'm not a fan of that.
Mm.
Right.
I think. It's a very difficult boundary to toe because I think a lot
of people. Secondly, you're a day youth. No one's doing this to look at you, right? Right? The guy's looking at your post. No one is expanding the screen to look and see if your beard is trimmed.
I don't know, Sheikh. I was looking fly.
He's looking to the right. He's going to the other side and looking at your wife. Then he's either going to commit sins, make you a day youth, or he's going to say, all right, no hasad for him, right? And he's going to insult you in other ways, right? So it doesn't go well either way. This guy is a Dayuth type. You know, he's on his way to being Dayuth.
I think
you guys know what a Dayuth is?
Of course.
It's somebody who almost accepts for his wife to be stared at in the haram. Right? He accepts that.
I think
there's a lot of Dayuths. Yep. There was a poor guy. Okay, listen to this. By the way, if you're on Instagram, you can hop over here, right? You can hop over to YouTube and listen and see both screens if you're on Instagram. But listen to this story. I'm on YouTube one day, and I'm on a channel, and this guy's video shows up. And this guy says, brothers, and he's wearing a kufi and a thobe, and I'm thinking maybe he's going to give a wad or something. But he's a young guy, and he says, brothers, why are you calling me a dayuth? Why are you insulting me on my channel and saying I'm a dayuth, right? I'm not a dayuth. I pray 5 times a day. I fast. I memorize the Quran. Don't call me a dayuth, right? And I'm like, why are people calling him a dayuth? So I click on the channel and just look at the thumbnails. You're a dayuth, right? This guy has every single picture, every video, close up with him and his new bride. Multiple video. Oh, we're going here. We're going to get coffee. We're going here to do this. Him and his bride are right there, and they're snuggling and stuff. No, you're a dayuth, right?
I think, is there a line that you could toe of wanting to make content on the internet and do these and being like a social, like a publicly facing family, but then also not be a dayuth?
Why would you? Why? Why would you give an opportunity to everyone stare at your wife?
It's good content.
Good content. You want to make money? There's a lot better ways to make money, right? Mm. If you're going to do haram, might as well do many other haram things too.
That's fair.
That is far better content and makes you far more money. Dayuth, right? If you're being a dayuth, be a dayuth fully.
Yeah.
No, but in seriousness, it's not a way to make content. There's a lot of ways to make content, right?
You can make a podcast.
Don't only go, you can only go in public if you have something great to say, right? But to entertain people through your family, it just doesn't sit right with me at all. It doesn't sit right to me.
They just passed in California. There's a lot of channels, like YouTube channels, TikTok profiles that were family, they only produced family content. And they would, it wasn't, nobody's being a dayuth, but they were like publicly advertising their kids and recording their lives for content. And so they just, some laws were just passed for protecting children.
From being overused.
Yeah.
By this new generation of parents who has no common sense.
And it was also with the money, because all of the money was put, it's now put in a trust that they have access to when they turn 18.
Wow. Yeah.
As opposed to just like the parents like putting their 5-year-old online, making a ton of money off of it. And then the kid's not getting any benefit down the line because the parents burned it all.
It's abuse. Years. It's a type of abuse, no doubt about it. 100%.
I think. Okay, how much longer do we have?
10-20 minutes. There's pizza here. Yeah. Is it hot?
We got everything.
Let's see. Well, I can make it out. 10-20 minutes, and then we check out this pizza. Who is it? Is it how thin is the pizza? Is the question.
Pretty thin, Sam's.
Sam's.
Oh, Sam's.
Like,
okay.
Like club. Sam's Club.
No. We have a brother here. His name is Sam. Okay. Yeah.
Sam's Club Pizza. Do they have, is Sam's Club Pizza the same as Costco Pizza?
Sam's Club and Costco is, yeah, it's all the same. BJ's, Samsung. But no, this is a actual pizzeria. His name is Sam.
I think we have a hard stop in about 5 minutes. So we'll step out at that point.
Okay, no problem.
Okay, I think just generally, I know that there's, you're obviously very tapped in with the youth of your community.
Yeah.
I know that you have probably had a ton of young people either in the premarital phase or the recently marital phase, come to you with like very, I don't want to say stupid, but stupid complaints or concerns.
Like what?
Young
married couples, you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Young married couples or couples that are about to get married.
It's so important. Some people come to you with a crisis and you have to walk them off the ledge and wake them up and say, this is not a crisis. This is not divorceable by any means, right? This is not divorce problems. Divorce problems are huge. And sometimes just people need a wake-up call. That's it.
Has somebody ever come to you and said, I'm going to divorce her?
Yeah. They were going to break up a marriage because of one family member complaining that the other family member, the other side, doesn't respond to the text fast enough. And I knew you saw the text, right? Right? She said, I know she saw the text because she replied to somebody who texted her after me. So break up the whole thing. So that's like, you got to walk the families off the ledge on this.
So at what point in this potential divorce process did they come to you? Like, they were like, they'd already, you know, done, like they've already divorced.
Fired up. They were fired up and they were about to tell their son, no marriage to this family because she's rude.
Hmm.
So she may be rude at that moment. She maybe have done something wrong. There's no one's perfect, but that's not divorce. A reason for a divorce, a reason to break up an engagement, okay. Right? You have to actually, it's not that you have low standards, but you got to be practical. People will make, they'll make mistakes after marriage that are far worse than this, right? Mm. But what breaks the whole thing is, it has to be big.
Yeah.
It has to be something really serious.
Okay, following that thread, what's the dumbest reason that you've seen a couple get divorced over?
Well, I'll tell you one of the dumbest reasons for somebody to reject the other party, or sorry, to be the cause of a breakup, is when they said that they want to get married, but they don't want to have kids for another 5 years, right? That's, to me, you're harming yourself and you just wasted this person's time. Hmm. Because when people get married, the assumption is 1, 2, 3 maximum years. But to say, I don't want to have kids for 5 years, it's a bit much.
Wait, so whose side broke it off?
The girl's side.
And so it was the guy who was saying that, like,
No, he wanted to have kids. Like, within a year or two.
Mm.
But not five. You don't wait 5 years. Now he's going to be in his 30s.
Yeah.
Right? That's, like, a ridiculous request. That's basically saying you're shooting yourself in the foot.
Mm.
But the stupidest reason for a divorce, most people, I think, are... It gets stupid in the engagement. It gets silly sometimes. Families get silly in the engagement. But after people are married, I think they really try to stay married for a long time.
Hmm. That's right? The goal.
That's the goal. And they fight through a lot of things if they truly are attached to each other. But the silly stuff, I usually see it in the engagement. And I see it from usually the family members, more so than the people, the husband and wife.
So on that, specifically on the engagement part.
Yeah.
Something that I think... Like just we were talking about before with like with respect to mahar expectations, it depends on the culture. With respect to an engagement period,
mm-hmm.
when is that period? After the fatha? Is it after the katbiktab? Is it after, like, at what point do you consider the engagement period?
Okay, very good. Engagement is simply an agreement to marry in the future.
Okay.
That renders us, we are no longer looking for options.
Yeah.
We are settled, but we just have to settle certain life affairs first before we get married.
Okay.
So the engagement, by the way, if it goes too long, it could be dangerous. Mm. It could be dangerous for multiple reasons. You can invite problems, or you could possibly get so attached to each other and do haram, right? So engagement is valuable in that saying, in principle, we're good with you.
Mm.
But if I don't know you very well, we're not going to get married right away. In principle, we're good. Let's have an engagement period of time. This is permitted in Islam, in which we'll continue to meet, but we won't marry yet. Maybe some of the layers of the onions will peel that we'll discover something rotten.
So what if you're from a culture that does, for example, Egyptians, even within our own, even among Egyptians, like sometimes people will do the nikah or katbiktab and then a year later do the walima, or sometimes they'll do it the day
before.
That's
a problem too. So between nikah and moving in together should not be too long, because that's okay. Now she has now two men in her life prominently, her dad and her husband. She's married to a husband, but she's actually really not married to him. They're not actually married.
Yeah.
Practically speaking, by Sharia, of course, they're married, right?
Mm.
But if by Sharia we're married, then that means I have certain rights.
Yeah.
And you have certain rights. But now you're actually living with your dad. So which way is she going? If her dad says come at 9, the husband says no, let's stay out till 10. So where is she going with this? They're going to fight. Yeah. There's going to be a fight. So it should not be really long. It should just be for practical purposes.
So on that note, and kind of last question here, With respect to the engagement period, you said that it could be too long. What's too long of an engagement period?
I would imagine that 6 to 9 months is the ideal.
Okay.
In 6 months, if the person is bad, he's hiding something, we'll see it. If their family is odd, too weird for us, and we don't match, our cultures really clash badly, it'll emerge in the span of 6 to 9 months.
Yeah.
And that's really what you want when you don't know each other, mm-hmm. right? And sometimes families really know each other like inside out, and they won't need that much. In fact, maybe they only need that much because, let's say, the guy, he's like moving from student to employee, mm-hmm. right? From student life to employment. And he just needs that 9 month period, right? Okay. So it's practical. So I would say I would hover around half a year to a year. And I would say that some people need far less than that. And we're going now to the 40 somethings who they know life very well. They're not going to need much engagement. They're adults. They probably just the engagement is for their families to adjust to the whole scenario.
Have you heard about an engagement lasting too long?
Yeah, in Egypt they do it all the time. 5 years, 6 years. I'm like, what is the point of all this, right? Like, what's the point?
Why does it take that long?
I think he's saving up, I think, or something. I don't know.
Okay.
But you've seen it, right? In Egypt they have long engagements and you just don't understand why. Yeah. What is the point of this? I know one guy told me they had an engagement for 4 years, right?
That's crazy.
And it's like, what is the point of all this?
Yeah, so my Arabic is not great, but mm-hmm. I know that there's a word in Arabic specifically when you're saving money for the sake of marriage.
Yeah.
It's like, as opposed to saving money for the sake of a car, like it's yakawin. It's literally to save money for the sake of marriage.
Correct.
Yeah. I'm assuming that this is other cultures have to see. It just blew my mind when I realized there's a word for it.
That's why the Prophet said, you are accepting his deen and his character. So in deen, you have obligations as a man. Hmm. I'm not going to just care about your obligation to fast and pray and you're fulfilling those obligations. What about the obligations to pay the way and protect your family, to fund and protect your family?
So would you say, for example, all right, I'm a medical student.
Yeah.
I have no income.
Medical student's different because you know what trajectory he's on. Hmm. It's almost like a guaranteed trajectory.
Yeah.
As much as we can guarantee anything. But let's say a guy who is working any other job, or he's a student and he's a historian, right? And he say, I'm going to finish my history PhD next year and then I hit the job market. Well, you hit the job market as a historian, nobody knows what's going to happen. You're not in a guaranteed path.
Yeah.
So then your dean won't right now be accepted in the sense, not that you're personal dean, but how are you going to fulfill the obligation to care for these people financially?
Yeah.
So am I now going to risk to put my daughter in a financial risk situation or a financial unknown? That would be, seems like maybe haram for me to do that, right? To put her, marry this guy, be in love with this guy. Who knows what's going to happen? You may be homeless. You may be living with his mom. You may be living in hotels. You may be living here again. That seems to be not right. And no dad would do that.
That's fair.
As a dad, you're going to say, I want to see receipts. Again, it's very different if I know you from childhood and we're all family friends. It's different. We can cover until you figure things out. That's different. But if you're somebody that you're coming and proposing and applying to this family and be part of it and you want to take on a responsibility, I need to see receipts. I need to see some paycheck stub, pay stubs, right? That's a fair ask.
Minimum 100K in the bank account.
In the bank account, not...
But I think, we have a hard stop.
Okay. We got to pray too. Oh, yeah.
We're good. We're traveling. Yeah. But y'all got to pray.
Okay.
But jazakallah khair. This was perfect.
That's
exactly
pleasure.
What we're looking for.
My pleasure.
We really appreciate your time.
Yeah.
Appreciate everybody else's time for tuning in and listening to this conversation on marriage and mahr. And too
so
much mahr.
So listen, you go to inpairs.io. I-N. No iqlab. inpairs.io. Sign up if you're interested in hearing on the 27th is around the corner. What happens if someone signs up on the 26th? You still go through them?
Then they're in the next month
for the next batch. Okay. So sign up And also, what we're trying to offer is mentorship for people. And there is a lot of knowledge needed to pave the way. Mm. And that's why I think mentorship or lessons even to parents of tweens is going to really help in the future. And we plan on doing that at starboardmarriage.com. We plan on giving those kinds of lessons to people, talking, just making them aware. Because I'm telling you, some kids, they're 13 years old, they mumble and they shake your hand like this. They don't look at you. They don't know how to make small talk. You say, how are you doing? Good. You don't know how to make small talk. Your parents, your dad has oppressed you. Your dad has misled you in life. He's not preparing you for life. He just physically produced your body and he feeds you. But he didn't prepare you for life. And I can't tell you how much there's a lot of that.
And you have an all-star lineup, too, of mentors.
You
have
great
Imam
mentors.
Safwan, Imam Merchant,
yep.
Muhammad Hassan.
We got great mentors, and parents need the mentoring, right? And we're going to have events for parents to get mentorship, to pave the way. At the very least, teach your son to shake hands properly with a good handshake, make eye contact with the person, smile, and initiate talk. If the other person says, how are you? Don't answer and say fine, and that's it. Say fine, how about yourself? Right? Don't say you to an adult. You'd say yourself. Like, those little things stick in a person's mind. This is a good kid. In the future, we'll keep an eye on this kid. Right? Those are things that are important. And for women, believe it or not, one guy said he was thinking about a woman until he saw her cracking up out loud in the masjid. And they said, what kind of crazy person is this, right? You don't have any akhlaq in the house of Allah cracking up out loud like this in front of everyone in the musalla? You don't have any akhlaq, right? Like, you're some kind of kooky person. Maybe that's extreme, but I'm not telling you right and wrong. I'm telling you what perception is, and perception is a reality.
You know, right? What's funny is, on that in particular,
yeah,
I was in the masjid with my dad and my brother.
Yeah.
And there was a Roomba that was, you know, like those little vacuums that go by?
Yeah.
And it came by, and we were the only ones in the musalla. And it came by, and it smacked my dad's leg as he's leading salah. I thought this was incredibly funny.
Yeah.
So I laughed.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, Adi, like, these things happen. Like funny situations happen. My dad cooked me. He was so mad that I laughed in the musalla.
Yeah. When was this? When you were a child?
6 months ago.
Subhanakallahumma bihamdika. Alhamdulillah, you're already married, right?
Alhamdulillah.
All right, so that
at least... Still learning.
Yeah.
So, alhamdulillah. You know, it's my dad didn't go through the mentorship course, but if
those old school folks didn't need mentorship courses. They didn't... You know that all the mentorship, all of marriage talk is basically stuff that was common sense 25 years ago in the old country. Somehow, coming to America, you start to rot. Your akhlaq starts to rot. Everything rots.
Yeah.
Something about the U.S., your bank account goes up, your outward life goes up, everything else goes up. The kids get taller, right? Yeah. But everyone else rots, and the most basic common sense akhlaq rots.
It's the downfall of an empire
it
in the U.S.
It totally is. It's a toxic culture.
Yeah,
I'm totally with, what's his name? Leonard Sachs, that it's nothing other than a toxic culture.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I think, last thing, we're giving out a ton of money on InPairs Masjid. If you're in the US or Canada and you go to our website, InPairs.io, you go over to the Masjid tab, we have a wait list. We already have like 800 people. We haven't actually launched it yet. We're giving out a ton of money to the people who sign up and are on the wait list. And if you recommend people, we give out even more money. So, exactly. We'll give out
if it's a low mahar. What do you mean giving money away?
Literally, we're giving out rewards. So a couple hundred dollars for the people who are number one on the wait list. And you can work your way up the ranks by recommending more people.
Yep. So. All right. Alhamdulillah. Very good.
Inshallah khair.
Very good. Thank you all very much. Unfortunately for everybody here, we can't take the Q&A. We got to go. But we'll be back Tuesday. Bi'idhni Allahi ta'ala. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdik. Ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta. Nastaghfiruka wa natubu ilayk. Wal asr innal insana lafi khusr illa alladhina amanu wa aminu salihat. Wa tawasaw bil haqq. Wa tawasaw bil sabr. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.